is Jonathan Fogel, and you are listening to Mac Edition Radio.
This is Harris Fogel at the Society for Photographic Education Conference in Miami. I'm with Tom Lopez, professor at the University of Miami, and Michael Paris, the chairman and a professor at the Rochester Institute of Technology. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Harris.
Hello, Harris.
Michael, you are the editor-in-chief, and Tom, you are the editor of the Focal Encyclopedia of Photography, 4th edition, a major landmark new book about photography. What's different about this edition, Michael?
Everything. Everything about the book is different from the 3rd edition. The 3rd edition was 906 pages, principally black and white, with not any photographs really at all. Lots of graphs and charts, but because of printing technology in the early 90s, it was impossible to afford color. So this book is four color throughout. It's larger in terms of its physical dimension. This is only 888 pages, but it does weigh more. It's 11 pounds.
And you also include a CD, I understand.
Yep, the whole edition is a searchable CD. It's a PDF file that's shipped with the actual book in the back. And so if you put in my name or Tom's name or anybody that's in the book, Nieps, you'll get every particular location in the book where that would be found.
Let's talk about the challenges of creating an encyclopedia, especially in an age in which there's been so much invention and transition in the last decade. Tom?
Well, my involvement with the encyclopedia was to be editor of a small section of the encyclopedia, which was contemporary issues. The Encyclopedia of Photography has traditionally been one that deals with the chemistry, the physics, the history, and it's a reference of the history of the medium and its science. In this edition, I was asked to be editor of a section called Contemporary Issues, which addresses the issues of how photography has changed, how it's made the transition in many ways from silver to silicone. And so we dealt with issues such as education, and we dealt with issues of how does the digital image differ from the silver image. And so my section in many ways is speculative. We were talking about the transition period of photography, and also we were speculating as to what the future of the education and the practice of the medium was. And that's the first time that a section like this has been included in an encyclopedia of photography.
Now, encyclopedias traditionally are vetted very carefully. You have usually an outside group of editors. You have experts in the field. You bounce ideas off. It's one of the criticisms of Wikipedia, in fact, is that the process for vetting what's in or not in has been somewhat convoluted. Of course, that's also a freedom, right? So how did you approach the content? How did you approach who was included, who wasn't included? Michael?
Well, the first 3 months I was in complete denial that I had accepted this job, and I had no idea how to do that very task. So I spent time with the 3rd editors, that one of them still lived in Rochester, and I picked his brain, and I just went through every single page of the 3rd edition. I looked and looked and looked and started to, it was in a digital form for me, so I was copying and pasting and trying to create some logical form. When I was retained as the editor, part of the deal was that I would have up to 6 section editors, and so I was thinking to myself, well, if you'd go like from A to D, and then the next person gets E to F or something of that way. Well, that didn't seem like that was a good way. And so it seemed themes was a much better way and could rely on the strengths of experts such as Tom. So the process then became, well, finding 6 people who would be willing to take on that role of developing approximately 150 pages of content. When Focal retained me, sort of the rules was I could get up to 6 editors, I would have a permissions budget, and that the book would approximately be 1,000 pages for color. Dividing the book into 6 then became sort of a mathematical model, and each editor then became responsible, empowered to do what they felt made sense for their subject with 150 pages to fill.
And who were the editors and what were the different sections? Because the sections really define the themes that make up the book, right?
Yeah, and I wrestled a lot with that notion. I mean, how do you take photography and divide it into pieces of, like a pie? So the history and the evolution of photography was one of my sections. The next section dealt with 20th century themes and practices and photographers. Of course, digital was a huge piece. How could you not deal with digital? We went into science and technology. There's a section that deals with more or less chronicling all of the practices that were used in silver halide technology called Materials and Processes Essentials. Science, contemporary issues that Tom participated in, and I think I just went through that short list. Oh, I also added a section a month before publication dealing with companies and commercial applications like portraiture and wedding and things.
So who were the section editors, and why did you choose those particular individuals with this responsibility?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think a lot of it was evolutionary. I had interests in what I wanted the book to look like. It was more of a vision than a concrete model. So I was looking for subject matter experts that were well-known in that particular region. So the history and the evolution of photography section was handled by Grant Romer and Mark Osterman from the George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film. Clearly resident experts, internationally renowned, invited to speak, lecture, do workshops, write books. I approached a number of people, to be honest with you, and it wasn't like anyone was top choice. It was my sense of it from talking with former editor Leslie Strobel was, find people that like to write. If people don't like to write, they'll never do this job. So they might not be famous, but if they like to write and they have a publication history, they're going to do the work for you, and find people that finish what they start. So I approached people that I knew or that had been recommended to me that would be representative of that kind of criteria. So I approached Nancy Stewart from the Cleveland Institute of Art. She'd worked at RIT for many years, and she was an active academic and appreciated the importance of such a volume. So she took that section on. I approached Francesca Fry from the Image Permanence Institute, formerly at RIT, and now the McGee Distinguished Professor for the digital section. Francesca's done lots of work on databases and archiving of digital images, media storage, and longevity. So she's also very active in IS&T, and she knew all of the scientists, and she knew all of the engineers that deal with color processing and encoding and stuff that was way far outside of my own expertise. And Tom's involvement was kind of a very wonderful, lucky accident. When I had initially crafted my proposal to Focal on how I was going to handle the revision, I had put Tom's name in as a reviewer. RIT, one of the people that initially looked at the book said they didn't know RIT invented photography. The third edition was so RIT heavy that was kind of like a stinging comment. But it made some sense to me in that, okay, if the world perceived that this particular edition, the third, was so RIT concentric, that I wanted to broaden its reaches. And so I asked Focal to use Tom as a reviewer, and he made the proposal to include this contemporary issue section to the piece. I knew of a world-renowned astronomer, David Mallon, who I'd worked with on other projects. David has galaxies in his name that he's discovered with photography, and so I approached David to do that, and also a chemist from RIT who volunteered to do the 20th century material and processes essentials. So that was that took me a year to find those six people. It was slow.
So, Tom, you added an entirely new section. What was your approach to that section, and what were the revelations that you gained through this process?
Well, my approach was structural, which is 20th century is commonly thought of in academia as an issue of linguistics. So the structural approach is, how does something function? And it applies to language primarily, but it's been applied to images, especially in the last 40-some-odd years. So how does something function? Photography, when it was invented, or certainly for the first 60 or 70 years, its function was primarily to perfect the process and to document as evidence the real world. But, as it evolved throughout the 20th century, photography became something else. It became a tool for artists to use. It became a way to colonize. Art is a way to colonize by either bringing the images of the exotics back to the first world, Europe and the United States, industrialized nations, but it's also a way to explain our reality without getting too long-winded. So the function of photography changes, and it constantly changes. Photography has always stood for change, whereas painting has followed in many ways certain kind of materials and messages. Photography was willing in many ways to change its role very quickly because it was one of the first technologies that really encompassed the art world. So anyway, so my questions were, what does photography, what's its role today? And its role was many. It had educational roles, it had theoretic roles, it had political roles, and we divided the section that I edited into four different areas. And primarily they were areas of theory. What does contemporary art theory What's the interchange between photography, the exchange between photography and contemporary theory? Also, education. What's the pedagogical issues involved in teaching something that you're inventing and that changes so rapidly? And so, you know, just something simple. Budgets. Universities were used to buying a dark room. You buy 20 enlargers, you put a sync line in, and those things will be there 20, 30 years, and now you're buying a computer every year. You're buying software every year. It is this constant drain. And we jokingly say that it's not coincidence that there's two industries that refer to their customers as users, the drug industry and the computer industry, because you're always looking for that next hit that's going to make you happy. So you're asking those kinds of questions. And when they were open-ended, I had no expectations of the answers. All I did was ask questions, very loose questions, to what I thought would be about 30 people. And out of those, we wound up with a section that deals with people's real life experiences. For instance, publishing, Barry Haynes wrote about publishing. You know, the fact that he has to publish a book a year, his Photoshop artistry books become sort of the industry standard for universities. He has to publish a book a year. And so with this last one, he says, I can't do this anymore. I've done 9 editions in 9 years. You know, so as soon as you finish, the next one starts. What about the issues of self-publishing? You know, you can now self-publish. What does that do to the fetishism of the publishing industry? Whereas if you had a book, you were something else. It even brought into question the idea of what is an expert, because there are experts whose only work is ethereal. It exists in this ether of hypermedia. We had artists that dealt with photography only by using its images to express other ideas, such as Craig Freeman, who's a hypermedia artist. When he has an exhibition, he brings this huge hard drive that gets projected and is interactive. And so the issues were not ones that were didactic. It wasn't a polemic like most encyclopedias are. It was more about the time we're living. And I think we're living in a time of greater questions and answers. And oftentimes people wish simplistic answers to questions that need to just be pondered and nurtured a little longer to understand what the question is actually asking. So that was my involvement, to basically set up a paradigm where artists, writers, philosophers could speculate on where photography is and where it might go.
I've had several editions of the encyclopedia on my shelf as a reference, and it was a reference. It's where I turned to find out an optical question or a chemical question. But this edition has artists, it has photographers, it has full color. It's a completely different feel for me. How did you approach the idea of who to include and who not to include? What were the inclusion criteria, for instance, for contemporary photographers?
Well, as I shared earlier on in the conversation, one of the carrots that I used to recruit editors was that each one would have their control of their pages, that I would serve as a clearinghouse for the book, I would serve as an intermediate between Focal and them, that I would answer questions for them, react to their ideas, but it became their canvas, for lack of a better word, to create. And in doing as much, I empowered them to take ownership of this work so that they felt good about it in the end. You know, I've worked for a lot of people in academia and in healthcare, and the minute the boss becomes a boss and tells you how to do something, you lose interest in it really quickly, and it's not yours, it's theirs. So for me, it was crucial that everybody felt like that was their book, that we had 6 or 7 mini books in this particular encyclopedia. And you had asked a question earlier about the different eras of this encyclopedia and how you could go there specifically to find out about a chemical or specifically to find out about an optical equation or a lens. That's still in this book. That's kind of the beauty for me. I designed this revision in such a way as that if I went to Google, which everyone in the world does first almost now, and I typed in history of photography, I would get a litany of websites, and they would be hierarchically shared with me, and I'd click the first one, and I'd get something, and I'd go to the second one, and I'd find something. Well, this book is sort of organized that way as well. If I look in the history of photography, it's all in one section. In the third edition, if you wanted to know about an anaglyph, or if you wanted to know about a daguerreotype, or you wanted to know about a cyanotype, you had to go to the C's, or you had to go to the D's, or you had to go to the X's. So you were running back and forth through the book. Well, now you're going to be in one place. So the concrete facts are all there. You can get every single fact that was in the third edition. And I would argue maybe The fourth edition has more facts than the third edition. They're just shared in a completely different forum and a completely different way. I mean, I wanted the book to be modern. One of the interesting things that occurred along the way is, so I gave six people the freedom to create 150 pages, and then somewhere along the line the work started to show up, and everybody got nervous that we were going to have 1,200 pages. No one writes too little. People that really did agree to finally write, and we didn't have everybody deliver. I mean, people made commitments, and it just didn't happen. Poor Tom had two hurricanes cross Florida in the middle of the production cycle. He was gone for 4 or 5 weeks. I mean, I was like, where is Tom? So, I mean, we had things occur that no one could have anticipated in the production of the book. But I was worried, Focal was worried, we're going to end up with too many pages. And so that was a whole nother set of anxieties along the way. But I think that gives you some sense of some of the strategic thought behind how to get the content, how to create, you know, the individual editors themselves, they wrote their outlines and they harvested writers and worked with ideas themselves, but they were sharing freely back and forth. It wasn't like they were all by themselves. I was very aware of what everyone's struggles were and what they were working towards, but it was still a mystery what would be included.
Were you both conscious of the fact that you're, in a sense, writing history, that people are going to view this as a definitive statement?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think it was important to bring into question the veracity of history as written. Because when I studied the history of photography, it used to only be Beaumont Newhall's history of photography. And then Naomi Rosenblum comes along and to some degree expands the concept of the history of photography, because Beaumont Newhall's tome, which was very thin actually, you know, excluded more than it included. And it was such a Merrill-centric process. You know, only certain kinds of photographers got in, and many were excluded. And I think to some degree, this edition of the Focal is far more inclusive. I mean, the world has changed. I mean, the fact that we're having this interview, you know, in the ether, to some degree tells us that we're living in a different time. I mean, we're not living in a sense of presence. We're not living in a sense of past or future. It's a very fluid envelope that makes some people uncomfortable. And I think to some degree, this edition is as much history as any other or as any future editions will be. But certainly, if what you're looking for are the 11 commandments of photography, then perhaps any encyclopedia will function for you. But if you're looking for the possibility of an organic book that will grow and with you, and I think the fourth edition will grow until the next one comes out with the individuals. And this book isn't one that you basically can get out in a year or two or maybe three. So we don't know when the next edition will come out. But I would like for people to understand that a confidence in that kind of history may be a 20th century and past concept, and the 21st century may be something else.
Does the Wikipedia experience of so many people around the world contributing to a knowledge base, does that inform your process a little bit? Maybe not the specific way that Wikipedia works, but the notion of what constitutes an expert, which you mentioned earlier?
Well, I mean, to some degree, I think all of these questions are sort of answered by the individual and what their expectation for that answer might start to become. I think that was one of the interesting experiences for me along the way. So I get this email from Focal Press back in the fall of 2003, and they're looking for an editor-in-chief to do this. And so I have the logical brain arguing with the emotional brain about, do I do this? No, I'm terrified. I shouldn't do this. Well, I obviously chose to pursue my emotional brain rather than the logical one and take the advantage, because, I mean, how many opportunities in life would I ever have to pursue this adventure? I don't think, first off, real encyclopedias have been quickly disappearing from shelves in libraries. I mean, when I was invited to do this and Focal had the courage to revise this edition at a time when libraries aren't buying encyclopedias, that the information is moving online, that Wikipedia, which was new, it has all these different iterations of itself, is continually dynamic. I mean, within a month, I realized my book would never be complete. My book would never be real time. That wasn't possible. Synchronicity wasn't going to be part of this. So I needed a book. I needed people that were conceptual, technical, that wanted to try to create in a single volume something as complete as the process would allow, that it was going to be limited. But what was limited in it was incredibly important stuff, that it would archive film photography, for one thing. I mean, when one starts to think about photography and its evolutions, once silver halide technology was more or less adopted, it lasted, and it's still being done. So nothing really changed except subtle improvements. You know, you had film, you had cameras, you had lenses, but in each year, then Kodak or Sony or Zeiss or Calumet or Nikon would make improvements to cameras and things like that, but they behaved in many of the same ways. So in 2007, who's going to do a book on silver halide photography? No one. So if a book like this doesn't archive it in a complete way, a lot of the, not secrets, but the recipes, the tools, the structures, the important things would sort of disappear. Now, maybe some of that you can find on the internet, people that are actively artists. I mean, there's a lot of eccentric people in the book, myself included, a little bit lunatic, you know, passionate about stuff. So they may have on their own website their recipe for developing Tri-X. You know, everybody doesn't develop film the same way. So we wanted to make sure that that was preserved in a very meaningful way, realizing the book could never deal with everything. For example, in the life cycle, Kodak stopped making black and white printing papers. I bet you Photoshop released 3 different editions of itself. I don't know that to be the fact, but I bet you it was close. Companies like Forte disappeared. Polaroid went bankrupt. Ilford is in Chapter 11. I mean, so many amazing things that we all take for granted about this field. Kodak releases an announcement just last week. We're going to be a completely digital company. What does that mean? I make reference to that in the book, but I don't answer the question because only the time will tell what the answer to things like that becomes. So I mean, I can't answer many of your questions in absolutes anymore. I don't think we live in a black and white world. We live in a time when there's so many shades of grays. We feel different reactions to things depending upon the context of the answer to where the question is posed often influences the way the answer is heard.
Tom, your section dealt, among other things, with the epistemological change and the framework of photography. What is your hunch about what we're going to see in the 5th edition of this book?
You know, I don't think in those terms. And the reason I don't think in those terms is because the way you frame the question is begging for a certain kind of ontological certainty that I think no longer exists. So, for instance, we teach classes in my university in 19th century processes. So a student in the morning will be making tintypes. And then in the afternoon, we'll be scanning glass negatives, you know, to make inkjet prints, and then perhaps mixing the two in a completely free play. And it's they're unanchored metaphors, which people don't feel comfortable with. I think one of the better analogies that one can use, beginning philosophy students study the Greeks. I mean, you do Plato, you do Aristotle, etc. And then you've progressed through with Kant, Hegel, etc. But contemporary philosophy is problematic for many universities because it's so speculative. What is a contemporary philosopher? And to follow that up, there's a wonderful joke that art historians do not like living artists because it is far easier to write about Greek Roman than it is to write about someone whose style can change tomorrow and throw your thesis out the door. So one of the things that I loved about editing the section on contemporary issues was that we were dealing with questions. And again, just to go back to what you asked, I thought of the 30 people in the world whose writings and ponderings I enjoyed the most. So, I mean, I thought of David Trend, I thought of Nicholas Negroponte, I thought of Alan Combe, A.D. Coleman. I was thinking, oh, Liz Wells in Exeter, England. I was thinking of people whose books I had read or who had been on panels over the last, say, 15 years, who I thought were Johanna Drucker, I mean, you know, from now University of Virginia. I mean, I thought of like people whose brilliance and courage, because it takes a certain kind of an individual to write about what's to come or about what's today, because I mean, in many ways they're the same. And I thought this section would be one that in many that could be laughable, the way that we look at the 1950s commercials and find, you know, more doctors recommend Camel cigarettes than any other, and now it becomes laughable. but it contextualizes that time within a certain kind of a belief system. And I think with this book is that it talks about our time within certain paradigmatic links between 19th century and 21st century.
So at 888 pages, 11 pounds plus a CD-ROM, you've encapsulated the history of photography, the technical processes that have made up the medium, the stylistic changes, the equipment changes, and you've also brought it into the contemporary era by looking at the paradigms of photography. That's a pretty big accomplishment. You guys feel pretty good about it?
At this point, I'm a little bit numb, to be honest. The book just arrived on my desk about 3 days ago. I've lived this life for 3.5 years. It was a dream. It was just a constant in the back of my head. I can't tell you how many nights I haven't slept. I lost track of when I had a good night's sleep, wondering if I could actually make this happen. So, yeah, I'm very pleased, very proud, overwhelmed, honored, all of those kinds of words, because I don't know as how many people can say they ever were editor-in-chief of an encyclopedia. So it's a huge accomplishment. I can't fully comprehend what I did, if that makes any sense. It's just something that I think over time will feel better. Right now, I'm still exhausted. It's been a good 2 months, and I still feel tired, but that's okay. I expected as much. So, yeah, it's an incredible achievement for the field, for Focal Press, for all of the people that participated. I couldn't have done this without the 100 or so contributors. I mean, it's their work. All I did was help give it a voice and was the spirit behind continually pushing it through and continually harassing everybody to see that we were on schedule, because July 20th came, and whatever we didn't have July 20th, that was it. It wasn't in the book. We were given an absolute hard deadline. It was just the reality of their system. And so whatever didn't make it by that date isn't in this edition.
Tom, you feel the same way?
Oh, yes, very much. It was pain and joy. I mean, there were conversations that sometimes ran for hours discussing how someone was going to respond to the open-ended questions I had asked them, and then there was this exchange. So I feel very good about the section. I mean, I feel I think we've kind of covered more, and I think the next edition of the encyclopedia will probably have contemporary issues be a much larger section than this one, perhaps twice the size, because it's I think our language and how we approach photography is changing. I mean, I know that there's still folks that continue to deal with the image simply by what it looks like, but the transition of what an image means and how it functions becoming a more predominant question in more programs. So I feel good about my section, but I think it's the first time that it's been included. I think the next time it'll be a much bigger section.
Where can our listeners find out more information about the Focal Encyclopedia of Photography, the fourth edition?
www.focalpress.com. I think the book information will be available to where to buy it. All the content information will be listed there, the sections, and then the themes and topics that were created for each section. One thing that I'd really like to leave the viewers with, which is so, I feel so proud of this particular aspect of the book. The third edition was created in the early 90s, and so printing technology was very expensive, and so there was no color. It was a black and white book. It was a wonderful edition. Well, this book is a four-color book throughout, and as the process was becoming more solid, it was really fluid. We've used that word a few times today. The images that were coming in with essays were like slim to none. People didn't write and participate in this book because of the riches that they derived as authors, but more the spirit to be part of something kind of special. And you talked about writing history. Well, this book, of course, will be on shelves for many years to come, and so this may be legacy piece for some author or faculty member to have had participated. So I have this 1,000-page idea in my mind, and I'm getting incredible essays, but no photographs. So, you know, I think I learned along the way I couldn't be too timid about my work on this book and have it become anything meaningful, and I needed to be sort of in the face of stuff. And so I approached the George Eastman House. I went to the George Eastman House, naive as one could be about approaching a museum to collaborate on a book project, and I approached them about possibly illustrating the book as wherever relevant would, if possible. And they thought that was a fascinating idea, and they jumped at the opportunity. And I don't know actually the number of photographs, reproductions, of course, in this book from the Eastman House, but at a time when I didn't know if I could do this, I was up on halfway up the mountain, and I didn't know if I was going to fall down or go all the way up. They really were a huge boost of validation that this was an important project, and the inclusion of their reproductions from their collection really just make this a signature book in many, many ways. The quality of the reproductions, almost exclusively from the few that have seen the book, the director of the museum, the curator of the collection, they're just delighted with how their pictures reproduced in this book. And I've heard the same comment from everyone else. So I think that's another distinguishing feature in this particular encyclopedia that very few will be able to achieve because, I mean, museums like the Eastman House and others just don't automatically open their collections to any invitation. I mean, it has to be something that has value to them. So I feel particularly pleased and proud and honored that they felt they could trust this particular book and this project because of its history and because of its presence as a photographic resource for scholars for so many years. Since 1956 was the original publication.
I agree with you, Michael. I think the use of color is a profound difference to this book. It has a completely different feel. It's something you can just sit down with and either look up a fact or just sit down and open a page at random and learn from. It's a beautiful read. It's a wonderful book, and I think it's a huge accomplishment for both photography, but for anybody involved in cultural and social and scientific history as it applies to the visualization of our culture. And I really want to thank Michael Perez, professor at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and Thomas Lopez, professor at the University of Miami, for spending time with us today. It's really been great talking to you, and congratulations on this new publication.
Thank you, Harris.
Thank you, Harris. Thanks a lot.
For Mac Edition Radio, this is Harris Bowman. You've been listening to Mac Edition Radio. The contents are copyright 2007 and cannot be reproduced without written consent.